Take your Bibles, if you will, and turn to Mark chapter 1. Mark chapter 1. When I was a young Christian, probably I guess about 3 or 4 years older than Malachi, and the following few years, I had heard numerous Bible teachings concerning leprosy. I endeavored to understand what leprosy was, but had a very difficult time figuring it out. This was before the internet and things of that nature, which may shock my younger hearers that there existed such a time. But nonetheless, I endeavored to find out what leprosy was and why the Bible taught on leprosy like it does. It wasn't the easiest of things to do, and I hope by our message this evening that it may make it easier for each of us to understand exactly what leprosy is and why God has used leprosy as a teaching tool for us and for those in the scriptures over the centuries and millennia. And so we'll look at Mark chapter 1, and we're going to look at verses 40 through 45. Starting in verse 40, it says, "And there came a leper to him, beseeching him, and kneeling down to him, and saying unto him, If thou wilt, thou canst make me clean. And Jesus, moved with compassion, put forth his hand, and touched him, and saith unto him, I will, be thou clean. And as soon as he had spoken, immediately the leprosy departed from him, and he was cleansed. And he straightly charged him, and forthwith sent him away, and saith unto him, See thou say nothing to any man, but go thy way, show thyself to the priest, and offer for thy cleansing those things which Moses commanded for a testimony unto them. But he went out and began to publish it much, and to blaze abroad the matter, insomuch that Jesus could no more openly enter into the city, but was without in desert places. And they came to him from every quarter." So before we get into the text, I wanted to give you some observations or some information regarding leprosy itself. Leprosy, it's in the modern day, is known as Hansen's disease. I think people still just refer to it as leprosy, but it is given the name Hansen's disease after the man in the middle to late 1800s who figured out exactly what was going on with the disease. Leprosy is a chronic infectious disease that involves the skin and the nerves of the infected individuals. Pale patches on the skin are usually the first sign of the disease. They're painless and they do not itch. They're hard to notice, so are often ignored by the patient. What the disease does is it actually kills the pain receptors in the extremities of the body, starting in the extremities of the body. So you may get leprosy and suddenly you wouldn't be able to feel any pain for your fingers. And you think, well, that's wonderful. That's my first reaction. I won't feel any pain. I can do great things. But what ends up happening is you leave your hand in places you shouldn't. Most often what would take place is people would be doing something and when you feel something hot, you remove your hand. Well, someone with leprosy could feel no pain, could feel no heat, and therefore their hand would stay in the fire or stay in that hot place and would be injured severely because of it. And so this would lead to many, many, many injuries. It happens with your feet, with your hands. It would take place on your face. Many people that were leprous would have difficulties with their eyes because of severe injuries taking place because they didn't notice that they were that their face was being injured in some way, shape, or form. It is a terrible, terrible disease. It is something that, for the longest time, throughout the Middle Ages, they thought that your body was being consumed. They didn't realize that the reason that lepers go around with body parts missing was because of the lack of pain would lead them to those severe injuries. And so, if you want to see and learn more about it, you can look it up on the internet and you can actually go online and see pictures of individuals with leprosy. You have to make sure that you're doing it on an empty stomach because it is not a pleasant sight. the effects on their skin, and most of them have been deprived of fingers, some with hands, some with arms, feet, all kinds of things that have taken place to them. It is fascinating that there is still to this day no known cure for leprosy. They have some medicines that help slow the process for some individuals, but there is no cure for it. It is some type of a bacterial infection that they cannot conquer. Leprosy was regarded in biblical days as well as days even to the current time as a living death, because your life would become harder and harder and harder because you didn't lose the motor function of your limbs, but you lost any sense of pain, any sense of touch. And so you would lose the ability to protect yourself. And so over the course of time, you would begin to lose these appendages. But you're still physically healthy. You're still physically able to, mentally able to understand what's taking place. And so you can understand why this is such a horrible and deadly and, in that sense, dreaded disease. And it's a disease that is very communicable. It is very spreadable. So how was a leper to live? In biblical days, the law of Moses had specific commands about what a leper was to do. A leper was forbidden to enter any walled city. They were not allowed to be in Jerusalem. They were not allowed to be in any city that had a wall, because it was felt that the leprosy could be contained. While the Israelites were still marching from through the wilderness, they were not allowed to be within the congregation. That means that they were not considered to be a child of Israel. They were outside the camp. They were not allowed inside the camp. If a leper was walking somewhere and they saw other people approaching, they would have to yell out, "Unclean! Unclean!" so that those people that were approaching would understand that there was a leper coming, and they would move out of the path, so they would not come anywhere near them. Lepers were to have their heads shaved. They were to have their clothes rent, torn, shabby looking, and they were to cover their mouths so that people understood, even by just looking, that this is a leper. This is someone who has this dreaded disease, and we can steer clear of them. There were even specific laws regarding cloth and houses that had leprosy within them, because leprosy could live in the material of the cloth, and it could also live in the mortar of the joints of houses. And so there were specific laws, and if you would like to, you can study Leviticus 13 and 14 and see exactly what the process was to deal with leprosy within just a piece of clothing or within a house. And if the leprosy was not containable in the house had to be destroyed, and every stone and every bit from that house removed outside of the camp or outside of the city and placed in whatever would be the refuse dump, so that it would no longer be there to contaminate anyone. It is amazing to think that even today, they do not know how leprosy is contracted, how it is possible to gain it, how is it is possible to have the disease yourself. It is something that is not as often found in Western society. It does rarely pop up. It's mainly in third world nations, but it is something that is scary to think about. In the United States, just up until recently, in the late 1960s, there was a leper colony. And it was renowned throughout the world for its service to lepers. And they were constantly asking those lepers that were there to help further science. So for about 140 years, they were devoting themselves to be studied, to help cure the disease for someone later on. So there are specific commands in the law of Moses about what to do if you were cleansed from leprosy, if leprosy had left your body. Now, we don't ever read anywhere in the scriptures where leprosy left someone except for God's intervention. There is nowhere in the scriptures that that takes place. That there wasn't a supernatural intervention by God for the leprosy to depart. But there were specific commands if leprosy was to depart from someone as to what the leper should do. The leper was already to be known to the priests because they were the ones that would declare him unclean, because there was a whole list of things that the priests would have to do to declare someone unclean because of leprosy. And so they would have to go to the priests, and the priest would have to be presented by this person outside of the camp if they were still within the wandering, or outside of the city. Someone would have to call them out, and the priest would go meet this leprous person that had been leprous, and they were to buy two birds, two turtle doves. One of the turtle doves was to be sacrificed, and the Bible actually says it was to be sacrificed in an earthenware vessel with running water being poured over it. And then the blood from that was to be sprinkled upon the leprous individual 7 times, and also onto the other bird. And then the other bird was to be taken out and let go in a field. After this first part of the initiation, all of his clothing would have to be washed according to the leprosy laws. He would have to shave his head, and he would have to be thoroughly washed with water. If the priest saw no signs of any leprosy upon him, he would be allowed to re-enter the camp or re-enter the village or city, wherever he lived. But he was not allowed to enter his home or his tent. He had to stay outside with no shelter for 7 days. And at the end of those 7 days, he'd have to be shaved again. And not only would his head be shaved, but his eyebrows would be shaved, and any hair on his head, his beard, his face, everything would be shaved clean. And then he would wash again. If the priest comes back on the 8th day and still sees no signs of leprosy, then the man would have to take 2 lambs. And he would take those 2 lambs, and they would sacrifice one of those lambs. And the priest would take the blood of that the first lamb that was sacrificed, and he would touch him on the ear, on the right ear, on the right thumb, and on the right big toe. And you say, well, that sounds quite strange. But in reality, what's taking place is what is the side of power for most people? Well, it's the right hand. Most people are right-handed. And so the right side is always seen as the most important side. And so the sacrifice was meant representing that this man has been cleansed, this man or this person has been cleansed fully because of the blood being sprinkled. You do not find the blood of sacrifices being sprinkled on the individual, except here in the case of leprosy. The burnt sacrifice was not, the sacrifice for sin was not sprinkled on the individual. It was sprinkled on the altars. Here, this sacrifice is sprinkled on the individual. And then the second lamb was to be sacrificed as a burnt offering and consumed upon the altar. And then after these 2 sacrifices were done, then the priest would have to anoint the man with oil on his right ear, on his right thumb, and on his right toe, and then pour the oil over top of him, signifying that he was clean. And that's an important statement. He wasn't healed. He was cleansed. There's a difference there, isn't there? We think of the things that Jesus has been doing so far in Mark, but as we go through all of the miracles that he performs, and we think of them as being healed. Nowhere in the scriptures does it talk about being healed of leprosy. It talks about being cleansed of leprosy. And we'll get into that reason in just a little bit. So we look at this text. Hopefully that gives you an idea of leprosy and the importance that it played to make sure that you were clean. And so here comes verse 40, and there came a leper to him, beseeching him and kneeling down to him and saying unto him, if thou wilt, thou canst make me clean. So whatever they were supposed to do about yelling out, unclean, unclean, this leper seeks out Christ. He seeks out Christ and he bows before him, and he's beseeching and pleading with him, and he's begging him to heal him. And there's a couple fascinating things here. This leper knows something about Jesus that so few in the Gospel of Mark know. Because, again, we're going to look at some of the issues with leprosy in the Old Testament, but there is not a situation in the Old Testament where there was a leper cleansed except for divine intervention. Except through the healing hand of a prophet or through God's specific word was a leper cleansed. And this leper somehow had heard of Jesus, and he comes and he finds him and he bows down before him and he says, "If you're willing, you can cleanse me." He knew Jesus had the ability. He knew Jesus was capable of it. He knew something about who Jesus was. And he believed it. He believed in who Jesus was. And so he kneels down before him and declares it. Say, "Jesus, if you're willing, you can make me clean." The only obstacle there is the willingness on the part of Jesus. It's not anything to do with the faith of the man. The man believes that Jesus can make him whole, that Jesus can cleanse him of the leprosy. There's great humility here, isn't there? I mean, he's bowing before him and beseeching him. They had never met before. The man had just heard of who Jesus was. And he believed it, and he ran to him, and fell down before him, and humbled himself. And didn't say, "Jesus, if you're willing, you can make me whole, because I was a good man before I got my leprosy." We don't know when he contracted it. We don't know how long he's had it. But he doesn't say anything about that. He doesn't say, I'm worthy. Or if you do this, like, there's so many people that you always hear of the foxhole prayers of those that are in wartime. And they'll say, "Lord, if you get me out of this, I will do whatever for you. I will serve you. I won't do this anymore. I won't do this anymore. If you do this for me." You don't hear that from this man. He says, "If you're willing, you can make me clean." And he leaves it completely up to Jesus. He's not claiming any merit. He's not claiming any worth in himself to be made clean. It's all based on the worth of Jesus. And so what does Jesus do? Verse 41. "And Jesus, moved with compassion, put forth his hand and touched him, and saith unto him, I will, be thou clean." So Jesus, the first thing it says is he's moved with compassion. One question I have is, how often are we moved with compassion for those that are suffering through illness? Whether it's brought on by themselves or whether it's not. Because leprosy often was seen as a punishment for sin. And so people thought, well, this person's a leper, I'm not going to help them because they're a leper because of their sin. But Jesus was moved with compassion. Now, that there's an important little action word there. He was moved with compassion. That doesn't mean that he just felt compassion within himself and turned around and went walking away. His compassion moved him to do something. It was active. He goes forth and does something. You think about this with the Good Samaritan. All of those that passed by, the priest and the Levite, and they had passed by. They may have felt some compassion, but they didn't do anything for the man that was laying there suffering. But the Good Samaritan was moved with compassion. He went over and he helped the man. And he dressed his wounds and he took him to an inn. Well, Jesus here is moved with compassion. He does something about it. Jesus was willing to cleanse the leper. Jesus is always willing to cleanse. So Jesus does something that would have been unheard of. It would have been unheard of in that day. It would have been heard of centuries before, and it would have been unheard of today. He reaches out and touches the leper. He's moved with compassion, and he reaches out his hand and grabs him, grabs a hold of him, and says, "I will, be thou clean." When was the last time that man was touched by another human being? Because no one would touch him because he was unclean. If you touched a leper, you were unclean. If you touched a leper's clothes, you were unclean. If you sat where a leper had sat, you were unclean. Nobody was going to touch him. We don't know how long he was a leper, but I would almost guarantee you that no one touched him from the time that it was announced that he was a leper. So whether it was days, weeks, months, years, decades, nobody touched the man. He didn't have human contact. And yet Jesus, moved with compassion, reaches out and he touches him. One thing to keep in mind, Jesus had no need to touch the man. Jesus didn't need to touch the man to heal him. He could have cleansed him any which way he wanted to. He could have said, "Be thou clean," without touching him. He certainly could have just thought it. We see so many things of how Jesus heals throughout the scriptures. He could have done anything he wanted to. But he reaches out and he touches him. That's compassion. Knowing what the man was going through. Knowing that the man had not been touched for so much, for however long. And Jesus feels for us. One thing to keep in mind is Jesus, unlike whether if we had touched somebody that was leprous, Jesus was not made unclean. That's something that's very important. When you look at the miracles of Christ throughout the Gospels, Jesus is never made unclean or never touched by whatever infirmity the other person has. It never comes upon Christ. And that's something that's important because it points us to what is taking place with our sin. Because even though I'm a sinner and Jesus takes my sin upon him, he's never touched with my sin. He never becomes a sinner. Sin never has a hold upon him. Just like leprosy never has a hold upon him here. That sin never touches him. But yet he turns around and gives me his righteousness. And so Jesus does this. Jesus does this and he reaches out and touches the man and says, "Be thou clean," and immediately the leprosy leaves him. It's gone. He reaches out his hand and he takes him, whether it's by the hand or by the arm, or places his hand upon his shoulder. Well, we don't know exactly. But as soon as he touches him and he says, "Be thou clean," it's gone. There's not a speck. There's not a spot. You know, I can't imagine. I used to have this nightmare when I was a teenager where I would be asleep, and I guess I was sleeping so stilly that my nerves got used to the position I was in. So I would dream I was falling. And I'd suddenly wake up because I'd move a little bit, and it felt like I hit something because all my nerves all of a sudden woke up. Well, imagine this man. Here he is. He's got no feeling anywhere. And he doesn't have feeling in his hands and in his feet. And all of a sudden, Jesus reaches out his hand, and all of a sudden, all that feeling returns. He feels his hands again. He feels whatever spots are on his face. He feels his feet. All of those things that were deadened before now are made alive. New life has come to his body. And there's no effects whatsoever. There's no spots. There's no flesh dropping off. Now, I have the feeling, the scriptures doesn't tell us, but I have the feeling that if he had lost fingers, that they were whole again. If he had lost some part of his body because of an injury, it was whole again. To walk then around, being in that state before, and to now be whole, to feel, to be able to touch, to be able to be touched. Imagine what that man must have been going through. But Jesus tells him something. He says to stay quiet. He says to stay silent. In verse 43 and 44, "And he straitly charged him, and forthwith sent him away, and saith unto him, See thou say nothing to any man, but go thy way, show thyself to the priest, and offer for thy cleansing those things which Moses commanded, for a testimony unto them." And so this is an important little portion here. The leprosy has left him, but Jesus tells him to stay silent, to first go to the priest. Now, we don't know exactly what takes place, and we'll get into that in a moment, but he tells him, don't say anything to anybody, but go to the priest and show them. Show the priest and go through those situations that Moses commanded. And you think, well, why would he say to do that? Jesus is going to be the sacrificial lamb. So why would this man need to make those sacrifices? But Jesus tells us, he says, for a testimony unto them. For a testimony unto the priests. Because I can't imagine that those priests saw any healing or any cleansing of leprosy. You think about how few instances in the scriptures there are of cleansing of leprosy. And here there is one that shows up. And he's cleansed of his leprosy. Because he's going to go to the same priest who had declared him unclean before. The records are written. Abram of whatever village is unclean of leprosy. He's got to go back to that priest and say, I'm not leprous anymore. And go through all of those steps. It was a testimony to those priests, to those people, to say, there's something different going on in Judea right now. There's something different taking place in Galilee. There's someone that has healed a leper. Who can do that but God? Who can take it away but God? And God alone. The man would not have been restored to Jewish society until he had shown himself to the priest. He would not be allowed to be welcomed in until he had shown himself to the priest and gone through those rituals for that. So why this commanded silence again? One reason, I think, is miraculous deeds do not invariably lead to lasting faith. People nowadays, they marginalize the miracles so much that people think, well, if I would have seen a miracle, then I would readily believe. But when you study the scriptures, you realize that that is not what takes place. People only want to see the supernatural. They don't want to believe. They don't want to change who they are. You think about the book of Exodus. You think about the Israelites leaving Egypt and all of the plagues and all of the things rained down upon the Egyptians. And yet those people died in the wilderness through their unbelief. Even though they had seen the hand of God and felt the hand of God bring them out of Egypt, help them, led them through the Red Sea on dry ground. And yet what? They didn't believe. I think it was also a sign to the rulers of Israel that the Messiah was here. The Messiah has arrived. Because who else can heal leprosy? And not only that, but that he's not leading an insurrection. He's not here to usurp power. Why? Well, he leads this man back to the priests. He says, go back to the priests and do those things that are required of you. And he tells the man to stay silent. If he was to lead an insurrection, if he was to lead the people in a revolt, he certainly wouldn't have done that. He would have kept the man right by his side. Because you notice that's what happens in these healing shows that take place. They want the person that may have experienced some true healing to be right by their side so they can constantly point to them and say, this is what happened to them before and now they're here. But that's not what Jesus does. He tells them to stay quiet. It seems as though the man didn't listen to the command. In verse 45 it says, but he went out and began to publish it much, and to blaze abroad the matter, insomuch that Jesus could no more openly enter into the city, but was without in desert places, and they came to him from every quarter. The word but there gives us the idea of a contrast from the preceding verse. Here's what Jesus told him, but the man did this. Now, we don't know. It's possible that he went to the priest first and then noised it abroad. We have no idea if he did what he was commanded to do about going to the priests and offering those things according to the law of Moses. No matter how much we like to think so, though, would we have kept silent if it had been us? If it had been me or one of my family members that had been dealing with leprosy, if I had had leprosy for a decade, and no one wanted anything to do with me because of it, and I had to live outside of a city and just feed off of whatever I could gather together, and now suddenly now I'm healed and I'm cleansed, and there's not a spot on me. I don't want to tell everybody I know. And I'm sure when they found out about it, they'd want to tell everybody they knew. You know, what if this man had been married with children? Wouldn't his wife like to know that? Wouldn't his children like to know that? And wouldn't she go and tell her friends and her relatives? And wouldn't their children be happy and tell their friends of what's taking place? Of course they would. Now, we don't know what order these things went in, but I just want to caution you about being harsh to people, as so many want to be harsh to this man because he didn't listen. That would have been a hard command to follow, not to noise it abroad. And we don't know that he didn't listen, that he didn't go and show himself to the priest. And one other thing is that if the disciples had wanted a large following, they got it now. You know, before when we were talking about them, when they found Jesus praying in a secluded place, you get the impression that they wanted the attention because they thought of him as the earthly Messiah that was going to set up a kingdom of Israel. Well, if they wanted that, they certainly got it. And then they're going to get the problems that go along with it. Not being able to go into the towns. Not being able to sleep in a bed. Not being able to eat a regular meal. So, why does the Bible do this? Why does the Bible equate leprosy with sin? Because it does so. There are examples in the Old Testament and even in the New Testament where you see that it is equated with either sin or unbelief. The first example of leprosy is Moses. When Moses is confronted with God at the burning bush, and he starts to question God, and God tells him to stick his hand in his bosom, and his hand comes out leprous. And God says, stick your hand in again, and it comes out clean. And then you have in Numbers 12, Miriam and Aaron, his brother and sister. And Aaron is the high priest, and Miriam is helping along with the work, and all of a sudden they start to lift, they think that they get big heads. And they think, oh, you know what, we don't always need Moses. Why can't the Lord work through us just as much? And the Lord strikes them with leprosy as a sign of their sin against Moses and against God. And Moses intercedes on their behalf. And the Lord takes the leprosy away. Then you have the famous story in 2 Kings 5 of Naaman and Elisha, where Naaman is in another country, is the enemy. He is the enemy of Israel. And a servant girl says, you know, there's a man in Israel that can heal that because of the God he serves. And so Naaman goes, and he presents himself to the king. And the king is scared out of his wits. He says, the king of Assyria is just looking to start a fight. Because who am I to heal somebody's leprosy? Only God can do that. And then, of course, he goes to Elisha, and Naaman doesn't want to do what Elisha tells him to do, to be cleansed. And his servant speaks up and says, well, if he had said something special, would you have done that? Why don't you listen to what this man says? And, of course, Naaman was healed. In 2 Chronicles chapter 26, Uzziah the king of Judah, he's a good king. But he does what he's not supposed to, and he goes into the holy place, which he is not allowed to go into. And the Lord strikes him with leprosy. And that leprosy doesn't leave him until the day of his death, even though he was a good king. And then in the Gospels, in Luke 17, there are 10 lepers that come to Christ, and Christ says, go wash in the pool. And as they're going, they're healed. But only one returns to thank the Lord. Only one returns in gratefulness. And you see that this is a lesson about sin, but it's a lesson about redemption, all wrapped up in one. The leper is not a worse sinner than other sinners. We're all depraved. We all have the same disease. The problem is sin more than any physical infirmity. The problem is sin. The leprosy's origin is unknown, and sometimes people will think, well, I don't know why I do the things I do. I just do them. Well, sin is inherent in who we are. We get it from Adam, but we would be no different. How many times in our lives have we chosen sin instead of choosing the right way? And you think about leprosy and its devastating effects. Well, sin has the same effect. You know, leprosy, it deadens the feelings. It deadens the pain reception. And so all of a sudden you start to do things that you wouldn't normally do. Well, sin does that to our conscience, doesn't it? It sears our conscience. So that something that has tempted me to sin and I've sinned, the next time it's even easier to do that same sin. A leper was cut off from the congregation of Israel. And so too, sin cuts us off from fellowship with God. Cuts us off from a relationship with God. If you are not a believer, if you've not been born again, then sin is leprosy between you and God. You are unclean. And you have no way to make yourself clean. Only God can do that. And you have to go to Him in the same way that this leper does. If thou wilt, thou can make me clean. And beg Him for forgiveness. But even for a believer, even for a child of God, sin breaks that fellowship. Just like leprosy. And we need the forgiveness. We need God's intervention to put us right. See, the leper felt his leprosy, didn't he? Nobody had to tell him. Nobody had to reveal it to him. Nobody had to say, you know what, you're a leper. You know, you're unclean. He knew it. He was walking around with it every day. It was no shock to him. But that led him to cry out in faith to Jesus. Well, do we feel our sin? Like the man, the leprous man felt his leprosy. Men are not lost for eternity because they are too bad to save. No one's sin is so sinful that it's too powerful for the blood of Christ. But men are lost for eternity because they will not come to Christ. There's a small poem that I may have recited here, but I don't know where it came from, but I've recited it over the years. And that is, sin will take you farther than you are willing to go. Sin will keep you there longer than you are willing to stay. And sin will cost you more than you are willing to pay. That's the nature of sin. It's the same nature of leprosy. When someone became a leper, they're done for. The same thing is true for sin. You're a sinner, you're done for. And sin will constantly take you farther than you're willing to go. It will keep you there longer. You'll sin more than you wanted to sin. And it will cost you a whole lot more than you were ever willing to give up. I do not think that the leper ever enjoyed being a leper. Do you enjoy being a sinner? Do you enjoy being far from God? If you feel your sin, if you feel it the same way the leper felt his leprosy, then go to Christ. Beg him for mercy. Beg him for forgiveness. We point you to him.